Sign up to get an email every time a blog is published. Kelly says, Jen's story empowers us all to rise above our circumstances. Jen is an inspiration to all who have the privilege of being touched by her life. Her writing style is open, honest, and engaging. Her story is powerful, not because it's heart-wrenching, which it is, but because she chooses every day to live a life that shows she is not a victim of her circumstances. Jen's strength as a woman empowers us all to overcome the circumstances of our own lives. If you've checked all the boxes in life and yet you still wake up wondering, is this all there is? Or you find yourself feeling overwhelmed and stressed or triggered by past events, the blog will help you get through those negative emotions and lean into joy. Corrine says, when I signed up with Jen, I had no idea it was possible to be joyful. I couldn't see the joy in my life, even though I knew it was there. Jen helped me not only identify the joy, but see how much I had to be grateful for. Each day starts differently because of Jen and her coaching. I highly recommend her if you are ready to turn the switch from negative to positive. It's 100% free to subscribe to the blog. Go to the link and connect with Jen and choose joy.
Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. But today is a gift.
It is not our abilities that show what we truly are. It is our choices.
Hello and welcome to Jen Taylor Rerouting, where being rude is never acceptable, but sarcasm is welcome and swearing isn't always a bad option. Let's get started.
Hello, welcome to Jen Taylor Rerouting. Today I have as a guest Wynn Kelly Charles, who has become a friend of mine, and I'm very blessed and thankful. And Wynn, how are you today?
I am perfectly fine, and thank you for having me on as a guest.
We started this endeavor when I was on Wynn's podcast, and then we kind of got to know each other more and more. And of course, strong female entrepreneurs who have struggled are kind of who I love to interview. And so, Wynn, we're going to jump right in and start talking about you, because that's what this is about.
Yes.
And now I'm going to let everyone know ahead of time, you have cerebral palsy. We'll start with that. At what age did you know?
I got diagnosed in 87 with cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy is lack of oxygen injury at birth. And it could be caused by a traumatic birth, and it could be caused by a stroke at birth. It could be caused by choking on popcorn at the age of two. Cerebral palsy is just a lack of oxygen injury. Most kids receive it at birth. No, it's not genetic. And no, I can't pass it on to my kids if I wish to have kids.
Right. And I'm glad that you pointed that out, just because there's a lack of information probably. So you were diagnosed, do you know, and that was at birth?
Yes. Okay. I was diagnosed, I believe on June 22nd, 1987, which happened to be my birthday, obviously. And then, so I was diagnosed either on June 22nd or June 23rd.
Okay. And it affects everyone differently, correct?
Yes, it does. It affects, I know people with heavy speech impediments. I also know people who are nonverbal. Actually, the story I'm about to tell is public. I have a friend who was born able-bodied, and at the age of two, he choked on a piece of popcorn, aspirated on a piece of popcorn, and acquired what we believe is cerebral palsy.
Okay. Usually, though, in young children, and it's an oxygen deprivation, and everyone's affected differently. So how are you affected?
I have what's called hemiplegia cerebral palsy. I have moderate to severe cerebral palsy. My cerebral palsy isn't light. Both sides are affected. My I'm opposite sides of the body, which means I'm holding my cell phone in my right hand. My left hand is so weak and so short that I can't even hold scissors in it. I'm predominantly right-handed, which means I'm the opposite sides of my body on my legs.
Oh, okay. So it's your left leg that's stronger.
It's my left leg that's stronger, and then my right hand is stronger.
Okay. Now, we can jump in wherever you want. I want people to know, first of all, you have a college degree in early childhood education, and you work full-time with in the school system and in the special education department. On top of that, you're not just like, I'm an author, a published author, and I have one book out. You have seven books, and your eighth book is coming out this August.
Yeah.
So you worked full time. You have your own podcast. You're a published author almost eight times, and we have no excuses.
No.
There are no excuses. So tell me where you want to jump in. There's a lot of information about your dad, your mom, having a full-time
job. Okay. I do not work with special ed.
Oh, I'm
sorry. With able-bodied preschoolers, believe it or not. I wish I worked with special ed. No, I work with able-bodied starting those preschoolers, which anyone who knows who's in the education system knows that that working with able-bodied preschoolers is tough because of where the education system is going in the U.S. And so I am slowly walking away from education, and I am getting a degree, my second full associate's degree, thank you very much, in fashion journalism, and then I'll come out of there with a bachelor's degree.
Okay, so I messed up the special ed. I don't know how I messed that up, but I apologize. So
that's okay.
I've had that's a few okay. preschoolers, and they are pretty tough. So now, let's talk about walking away from the education system, because my oldest is 25 and my youngest is 7, so she's in first grade, so I can't walk away anytime soon entirely, but I would love to. So let's talk about why. You got your degree in early childhood education, and you've worked full-time in that, and now what's the disconnect?
The disconnect is, well, first of all, the pay. And as we record this interview, it's Teachers Appreciation Week.
Yes.
And one of the things they handed me was, one of the things my private school handed me was a bag with movie tickets in it, and which was mildly nice of them, but I'm thinking, really? A $100 paycheck would have been more for Teachers Appreciation Week. Now, that's not to say that I don't love Teachers Appreciation Week. It's to each their own how they want to do it. But where the education system is headed with Betsy DeVos at the helm, and I'm sorry if I get political here, but Betsy DeVos has stated quite clearly that she doesn't believe in public school education, and she also doesn't believe in special ed. Well, that leads all of us who are in special ed, either teaching it, who were special ed students like myself, to believe that these charter schools are going to have a hard time. So that's why I'm solely but surely walking away from the education system, because I don't want to be involved with that bomb when it drops.
Yeah. Well, I also, from my perspective, being a parent, instead of an educator, we have different, slightly different roles. And I've had kids in special education. I just feel like the parents aren't accountable for their children, and the school system has gone down as far as the funding for
I definitely agree. I mean, I'm looking at my paycheck right now, and half my cell phone goes towards my paycheck.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't encourage my kids to become teachers, which is really sad because it would have been one of my first choices 25 or 30 years ago. And now I wouldn't tell them not to, but I wouldn't encourage it. So that's really sad to me.
I could make more money podcasting and with a journalist degree than journalism degree than I can teaching. And that's sad.
That is sad. So you're walking away from that, and I'm super excited because you're going back to school this fall.
Yes.
Fall of 2017, and you want to get your next degree, which will end up being a bachelor's, and it's fashion journalism. So tell me why. Where did that is so different from education. I mean, well, they're not even
two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
Okay. I'm like, okay, I need to get the creative side. And people ask me all the time, people say, well, Lynn, why couldn't you have a 9-to-5 job? Why couldn't you do this in a 9-to-5 job? I'm like, I have a creative streak about me that there's no tomorrow. A lot of people with physical disabilities have the creative streak. And it's not because of my physical disability that I cannot keep a 9-to-5 job. It's because I'm too creative. And to get back to education for 2 seconds, I think that the education system is squishing all the creativity out of these kids.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
And when I look at it, I thought about, okay, what am I going to do when I first went back to college? I tried and then that didn't work out. So then I thought, okay, I need to get my passion back up, which my passion is podcasting. I consider myself a full-time podcaster who plays teacher on the side once a week. And so she's laughing at me because
I love it. I agree.
So the reason why I decided to go back to journalism school is because I thought, okay, for all these years since 2011, since 2011, or no, 2012, I'm sorry about that, I got the dates wrong. Since 2012, I've been self-taught. And I'm like, I need the training now to keep this podcast going. And I've been a fashionista all my life. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say my mom used to send me to school, not in play clothes by any means, but in beautiful dresses and with those sweaters with the horses on them. And they were a beautiful clothing line for children, I think out of California. And so my mom always dressed me as if I didn't have a disability. So I just thought, why not incorporate my love for fashion in a degree that I really, really love and a degree that I really, really want. And it's going to help me with the podcast. And when the education bomb drops, I will be making money at a career that a passion that I really, really love, that I don't consider a career. I don't consider podcasting a career by any means. I consider a podcast a big, huge college of me lifelong learning.
Right. I would agree with that because I podcast also. Yeah. So you tell me about your 7 books. Can we jump a little bit into
that?
Yay.
Okay. Yay. Well, I wrote my first book when I was 23 years old, and it was my autobiography, Living with Cerebral Palsy. And yes, you guys, it can still be found on Amazon. It's called I, W-I-N, which I, Win. Win is my legal name, and we'll get to why in a couple seconds. And as my mom was dying from meningitis and a brain aneurysm, I asked her, and now granted, this was a woman who, after 3 hours of brain surgery, didn't, to cure the brain aneurysm, mind you, didn't even name the people in the room. She automatically asked, who's taking care of when? Now, granted, the doctors were shocked that this woman was making full, complete sentences of who's taking care of when. And they might have been a little bit goggled, so I was told. But the fact that before she named the people in the room and made sense of who was there, she was concerned about me, and me because me having cerebral palsy. So, long story short, as she was admittedly in this coma, and this is where I don't believe that people can't hear you and mentally in this coma, because the day I walked in to her ICU unit, all her machines were beeping 1,000 miles a minute, and there wasn't a doctor, a nurse to help this poor woman. And of course, she was in distress, because why would machines be beeping 1,000 miles a minute? So what I did is rolled up to a bedside, and I basically said, over 100 times, I love you, Mom. I love you, Mom. I love you, Mom. I love you, Mom. So, and I was the only one in the room. My dad, who I still live with, left me. Her family left me. Of course, as I said, there wasn't a doctor in sight to help her, nor a nurse. And so they walked in right after to, I think, change the dump. Actually, I hate to get graphic here, but I know exactly what they did. They dumped the catheter out, and the catheter that they had my mom hooked up to, and left the room. And so that just made me extremely angry at the medical system. Not only did she get meningitis in the hospital, but they couldn't even calm scared half the death woman down in the medical and just coma. So long story short, after I did that, thank you very much, as her own daughter, I asked her, I said, well, since I'm watching you die, can I at least write a book on your tremendous legacy, my tremendous legacy? And she said, yes, as long as you do it gracefully, meaning don't spill too many family secrets. So, long story short, I gave myself a year. I wrote the book. I 2 weeks after the book came out, not only did my friends and family buy it, but my fan base bought it as well, because a lot of people follow me online. And then complete strangers were asking me, and enamored by this book about cerebral palsy within my years, really. And so they asked me, how do you do all this? How do you do all this with a chronic disability, meaning cerebral palsy? And so I said, oh boy, they opened up a can of worms that now I have to either put the top on or start a new project. And so when I thought about it, I'm like, oh boy, if I get behind that podcasting mic one more time and explain, hello, I have cerebral palsy, people are going to tune me out. And I thought, okay, how are we going to do this? So then I came up with the concept of why not bring on people that have interesting life on stories and call it Wins Women of Wisdom. Well, long story short, men wanted to get involved. So I'm like, okay, now the men want to get involved. So Wins Women of Wisdom isn't going to work. So now it's called Butterflies of Wisdom, which can be found in iTunes. And that's the story behind it.
Awesome. And yes, Butterflies of Wisdom is easy to find on iTunes. Actually, when I was on your podcast previously, I searched information about who is this person that I'm talking to. So yeah. It's actually very easy to find information about you. Amazon, Twitter is what you use a lot of. And on Twitter, you are at Wynn Kelly Charles.
Yeah,
on Amazon.
I hang out on Twitter. So if you guys want to tweet me and I respond. And when I become New York Times bestselling author with Sarah Bumholzi, I will, and get a team, of course, I will always, 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 always be responding to Twitter. I won't be one of those New York Times bestselling author that has her publicist do it. Always me on Twitter. Not always me on Facebook, but always me on Twitter, because I think it makes it more sense.
So it is easy to find you. It's Wynn, WIN, like you said, Kelly, KELLY, Charles is the last name.
Yes.
And Twitter, Facebook, Amazon, Butterflies of Wisdom podcast. I mean, really, it's really pretty easy to find all your information. The podcast is amazing because you're right. It's inspirational stories from other people. And this is, you know, I think it's fascinating, your story, because it's not mine. So it's different from mine. I think we all love to hear each other's stories and find passion in them. So that was your first book, and you said your mom was on her deathbed, and you were 23 when you wrote that first book. So how old were you when she passed away?
I believe 22. The reason why I say I believe 22 is because I don't remember. When I lost my mom, my life obviously turned upside down, and those days were running into one. So I don't remember what age I was. I believe 22 when she passed away.
Okay. And now, when did you get your associate's degree and start working full-time in education?
I got my associate's degree in 2012.
Okay.
2012, I received my diploma, and I hold a job one day a week. I didn't even walk at my original graduation. I shouldn't have, but this time around I'll be walking. And so this time around I'm in California, I'll be walking. But I was so devastated at the loss of my mom that I didn't even go to my own graduation.
Okay. And then your second book, you wrote the autobiography and you got a lot of feedback from that. And then there's six more books since then.
There's two anthologies which empowered women in social media is one of them. 20 Beautiful Women is another one. So those are anthologies. Now what anthology is I contributed a chapter to a big fat book, and that's all I did. And then I have another book coming out in September talking about mental illness. It's actually the story of Robin Williams. And I was honored and blessed enough to be approached by a New York Times bestselling author to do the foreword on that one. So that one is coming out in September too. And then I have my teen series, three books in that, and I'm slowly but surely working on finishing up my teen series called The View from My Hills with the original book. And I can't believe The View from My Hills is actually turning my life right now. And so that's talking about two teens, about all different sorts of different disabilities. And the main characters in that book, Zoe and Kelly, have CP. Kelly has a milder version of CP than I do. I made it my alter ego here.
Yeah.
And then Zoe is Kelly's best friend, who my best friend also has CP, and you quickly discover who's the best friend in that one. And yeah, so that's all based upon fashion, and that's all based upon that's all based upon different disabilities. I mean, we talked about Down syndrome in that book. We talked about cerebral palsy. We talked about being paralyzed. We go the whole gamut.
Right. Now, what changed in 2006 for you?
Okay. Really, do you want to go
We're going deep.
Okay. So, in 2006, I had scoliosis really bad, and it turned bad. Like, in about a month, it went from 20 degrees to, we believe, 45 degrees. Well, I had to go in for surgery, back surgery, obviously, where they put Hansen rods in my back, and they basically left me for dead. I am the youngest person to survive what they call propofol infusion syndrome, which propofol is a form of anesthesia, and that's how Michael Jackson died. Propofol is he called it "I Want My Milk," and Michael Jackson did. And so propofol is a form of anesthesia that a lot of people are allergic to. I come to find out that so many people are allergic to propofol that it's not even funny. I don't know why they still use it. So every time I go into surgery now, I say, that's the only thing I'm allergic to. I make sure that every doctor knows that I'm allergic to propofol. When I ask, what are you allergic to? I say propofol.
So you had an allergic reaction during the surgery?
Yes, I had allergic reaction during the surgery, and then they let my spine go dead for 20 minutes on top of that.
And that clearly wasn't the plan in the surgery?
Nope.
So what the original plan was to put the rods and the pins in your spine to straighten it and make things better for you?
Yep.
And what was the end result? I mean, obviously you survived it, so that's the biggest end result, the positive end result. But what was the end result with your spine?
The end result with my spine was my spine's fine now. Thank you very much. But the end result is for about a year, I suffered nerve damage, severe nerve damage. I quickly discovered that one when I was in the Caribbean in Nassau, Bahamas, walking down a set of stairs, and I quickly discovered that I had nerve damage, thank you very much. In 2007, they didn't tell me that. And then I ended up on a walker for the rest of my life. The walker I still have, and it's been about 11 years. My surgery date was June 14th, 2006. I woke up in the hospital saying, what hospital is this one? I hear, and they go in. You just had back surgery, and I was on so many pain meds that I can't remember the back surgery.
Wow. So definitely didn't have the desired outcome.
No.
In any way.
Nope.
And you use a walker. You're not.